Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with producer Rosemary Brandt. Rose and I want to welcome you to the Buckmaster Show on this Friday. It is May 30th, 2014, and of course, traditionally, today would have been Memorial Day in the old days, but now, of course, we've moved Memorial Day. But anyway, it used to be Memorial Day for many, many years. Hope you're having a great day and looking forward to a great weekend. We are live weekdays 12:04 to 1 on AM 1030 KVOI The Voice. We're streaming and podcasting, so you can listen to this program anytime, anywhere in the world at buckmastershow.com, and also the live stream at kvoi.com. Our media partners, tucsonsentinel.com, Inside Tucson Business, the Green Valley News, and Sahorita Sun. Our Friday Focus interview this afternoon, Adelita Grijalva is with us, president of the TUSD Governing Board. Adelita has been on the board for 10 years. 12 years, excuse me. Joining me to question Adelita is Mari Herreras, writer for the Tucson Weekly, who regularly covers the education beat for the Weekly. If you have a question or comment, call us on the Buckmaster Show live line, 790-2040, 790-2040. We also invite you to become a friend of the Buckmaster Show on Facebook. Mari, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's good to have you. And Adelita, good to see you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me back.
Kindergartners at 10 TUSD schools will be receiving 90% of their instruction in Spanish next school year. The district is switching from a 50-50 bilingual education model to an immersion program. Do you think that makes sense?
I do. We actually have two of our elementary schools, White and Davis, that have been using this model. And so because of the success of both of those models, the district really thought it's important for us to, one, provide the professional development and provide the structure for our dual language teachers and schools. And so my daughter has been in dual language since kinder. And I do know that the model really The ideal would be 50-50, but depending on the number of students that are in the class and the fact that most of the students are dominant English speakers, I think it depends on the day whether they were getting, you know, 20 Spanish, 80 English, and I think maybe 50-50 on some days.
So, and I think the research shows immersion really is the way to go at a young age to learn a foreign language.
Right. And, you know, all of the students have to be English proficient. So this isn't, you know, trying to teach students Spanish that are dominant Spanish speakers. These are all dominant English speakers that are learning to speak, wanting to speak another language. And I totally support it. And both my children will be in a program.
Okay. Mari Herreras.
Well, it's great because I think last time you were on and I was here, I don't like to use the term questioning. I feel like, oh, we're questioning Adelita, but we're
interrogation.
We're talking. But last time you were here, we brought this up because we were talking about DSEG, and part of the DSEG is to increase dual language programs, and how you were really confident it was going to happen, you know, and it did. So voila.
I know. And I'm really glad to hear it. And we also are looking at creating a dual language program and model at Pueblo, which makes a lot of sense because we have all of these programs in elementaries. We have the program at Ross Grudge and Pister. And so to have an opportunity to merge that into the school that really has come to the forefront for a lot of the dual language opportunities that are available to those students, I think that just makes a lot of sense. So I'm glad to see that we're moving.
I know
that
some
way.
Folks were saying this, you know, confusing this with ELL, but the ELL program is the same in terms of, you know, you're not going to, your ELL kids are still going to be their English has to progress before they would ever be able to benefit from
that. They have to be English proficient in order to be a part of the program. I do wish that we could use more of a model that has been working for English language learners, because this four-hour block is just not something that any educator that I've ever spoken to is supportive of. But we are going to continue to abide by the law, and that's the law right now.
Adelita Grijalva is with us on the Buckmaster Show, 790-2040. We also take your questions on Facebook, and we had a question for Adelita. Why was there no public hiring process for either the culturally relevant or the multicultural directors?
Well, the director level position, since I came into the district and well before I was here, they're usually made up of people that this individual is going to have to work with and that are knowledgeable about what the expertise in the area is going to need to be. So I, as a parent, could be easily tapped to participate in any of these hirings, but if I don't know the specifics about curriculum development, about how to write the curriculum, what the objectives are going to be, then I don't know how much I can lend to the conversation other than screening somebody on whether they come across as being knowledgeable. I do support the idea that we have people that are going to be working with this individual and can assess whether they're going to be doing their job to the level that we expect in the district. And in both of the hires for those two specific mm-hmm. positions, those individuals were already doing the work. And so
they were already within the system.
They were already within the system, but they were already doing the specific work in writing the curriculum. So I was really supportive of both of those appointments. And I think that we've, as a district, are really lucky to have both of them.
Here's Mari again.
Mm-hmm. The Wrightstown Elementary sale went through and not, you know, happened, and right. you guys approved it. And felt like that was a good vote to take place?
I do. You know, we did make sure that the community was really supportive of it. And this is the second time around for mm-hmm. Wrightstown. And so really now it goes up to the city level position and whether they are going to zone it and approve it for zoning. And so there's always the chance that it can come back to us. But my hope is that the community seems pretty supportive of Pepper Viner and that group and what they're talking about doing for that facility. And it's sad to lose a school, but I do think that we need to make sure that those all of our properties are being accessible to the community and not something that's just going to sit there and be a blight. And so I think we're working really hard to try to change that tide, same with like reopening Brickton Shoemaker as early learning centers for children. I mean, trying to create partnerships and redefine what those schools might be if they're not going to be a traditional K-5 or K-12 school.
And for those that don't know about the Wrightstown property, that is going to become what?
It's single-family homes.
Single-family homes.
Mm-hmm. And okay. they're really talking with the community about how many per acre, and I mean the community is a very strong they're made up of very strong advocates, and so I have no doubt that nothing will go through without their approval.
The developer went in and there was some backlash at first in the beginning, but they went in and started mm-hmm. conversations with the community to talk with them about exactly how the development would look and
right.
Well, the third rail of education policy is when you talk about school closings, people get very upset, and rightly
absolutely.
So. And the audit that came out suggested that perhaps more school closings might be in order, but how do you feel about it? Do you think you put out the school closing sign and the perception is to the public, TUSD has gone out of business.
Correct. And, you know, I've been a part of three school closure processes in the time that I've been on the board. They're all incredibly painful. And what I was really glad to hear from our superintendent is with the audit, he said, these are opportunities for us to look at suggestions on how to streamline. But I'm not going to take all of the suggestions. And he's made a public statement, reiterated it at two different meetings. And I'm saying it now that we're not moving forward with any school closures.
Bottom line. No, you're saying it right now.
We're not moving forward. And again, I'm just saying for this next school year,
yes.
for, you know, that is not part of the plan. And
Foreseeable future.
My hope is that what we can do is continue to focus on the 1-27, putting arts and music in our schools and really attracting more students so we get out of this cycle of, you know, declining mm-hmm. enrollment and school closures.
Well, and the audit reflected a lot of what the DSEG plan is about. And it also said good things. I mean, it said you guys are moving forward with the strategic planning process, which is one of the long-range strategic plan, making sure that the district is running proficiently. You guys just approved the software.
ERP software.
Right.
Yeah.
And that, pay inequity, that's been remedied by the district and Superintendent Sanchez. So it brought up those things, but it also says, look, there are these remedies. And so as the strategic plan moves forward, perhaps understanding what the school closure recommendation means may be some discussion we'll have in, what, 2015, 16?
Right, right. And I think that, you know, we need to continue to do, to get out in front of letting people know that we are here to serve the community. We're Tucson's district. And so what we can do to encourage families to give, if they haven't given TUSD an opportunity, come look at our schools and see what we have to offer. But also, if you've left the district, have the opportunity to come back and look at some of the things that we can offer for your children.
And the audit, do you think overall the audit was a good thing?
I absolutely do. I think that it really highlighted in a lot of ways the fact that we're moving forward with the strategic plan. What are the areas that we really need to focus on? And where are some duplication of effort that we need to change? And so I think that we can look to the audit, which is this third party that came in without any agenda, to say, this isn't an attack on a certain department. This isn't an attack on a certain group of employees. It's basically saying, we've been doing this way for X number of years. We haven't shown the results we need. So let's try to do something different.
Okay, Rose, I think this would be a good time to take our first break on the Buckmaster Show, our Friday Focus interview today. We are talking with the president of the TUSD Governing Board, Adelita Grijalva. Mari Herreras is here from the Tucson Weekly. If you would like to join in the conversation, 790-2040. We'll be right back. But first, we want you to give a listen to the fine group of people who support the work we do here in Tucson. We'll be right back. Widened and improved roads, new bike lanes, sidewalks, pedestrian crossings, and bus pullouts. Many of these safety improvements are funded by the Regional Transportation Authority through its 20-year plan, which is making a difference in our lives.
Hi, I'm Lori. I live near the Twin Peaks Interchange. Since that new interchange and road opened, life has become a whole lot simpler. The new road saves me time, and it's a beautiful drive. I love it.
The RTA, delivering our promise to you since 2006. Visit rtamobility.com or Facebook.
Today's rapidly changing world brings challenges and opportunities. At Pima Community College, we are working with business and community leaders to develop programs that provide the right training for today's high-demand jobs. Whether the goal is a new career, transferring to a four-year college, or lifelong learning, Pima Community College can help you open the door to new opportunities.
For more information, call 206-4500 or visit pima.edu.
Want the best care for your companion animal? Then Veterinary Specialty Center of Tucson is the place for specialty vets for your special pet. With a state-of-the-art, award-winning facility, only the Veterinary Specialty Center of Tucson delivers compassionate, comprehensive veterinary emergency and specialty care 24/7 in a wide range of fields. Veterinary Specialty Center of Tucson at North La Cañada Drive at West River or online at vscott.com. That's VSCOT.com.
Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico make a great getaway for a weekend or longer. It's just 3 hours or so from Tucson and 15 degrees cooler to get to an area with so much to offer, from hiking, camping, exploring downtown historic Silver City, or just relaxing in a lovely environment. Visit southwestnewmexico.org for the complete list of great places to stay and visit in Silver City, Grant County, New Mexico. Ready to do some antiquing? If you love a special one-of-a-kind object like I do, I strongly suggest Adobe House Antiques, specializing in early 20th century European and American art, and they have the best selection in town of antique light fixtures. Adobe House Antiques in the Jostler Design Building at 2700 North Campbell, 325-9439, and on the web at adobehouseantiques.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
Minutes past the hour on this Friday, this final Friday in the month of May. Adelita Grijalva, the president of the TUSD Governing Board, is our Friday Focus interview. Mari Herreras, who writes about education for the Tucson Weekly, is joining me in our conversation today. I won't use the word questioning. It almost sounds like the Spanish Inquisition has reopened here on the Buckmaster Show. Earlier this month, Adelita, TUSD announced there would be some spending, diverting some money. I believe it's about over $4 million right. from the central office to put it put that money into the classroom. And that is often the knock on public education generally, that too much money is spent in the front office at the administration. So this will help, I guess, to improve some teacher pay, huh?
Well, we're actually working on the compression. And so the compression isn't an across-the-board increase, and that's something that we still need to work on.
Not everyone's going to understand compression. Can you explain what happened there?
Well, I was on the board when we did it, so yes, I will take my share in what it was. But basically what TUSD was trying to do is be competitive with surrounding districts, and so we increased the starting teacher salary without accommodating an increase for everybody underneath. So, for example, there was the problem in the district where you could be a five-year teacher with mm-hmm. the district making about the same amount of money as a starting teacher, because we just increased the starting salary and didn't adjust anybody else. And so that compression is what we're addressing, what we addressed with, I believe it was $4.8 million, just the compression issue. So it's not an across-the-board increase, and that's something that we still need to work on. And Dr. Sanchez has made a commitment to employee groups that we're going to look at it in December when we have an idea of how many students we've gained back, how many students we've lost, because right now we're anticipating a 1,500 student loss before, you know, if we attract more students or lose less, then we will have some money there to really increase teacher salary. But the move from central to school sites was really a lot of the certified staff and classified staff that are working to support students, student services, dropout prevention, moving those people to an actual site. And so they establish better relationships with children versus being one person that's split between two or three schools.
Are the teachers' salaries comparable to other districts?
They're comparable, but really our teachers haven't had an increase in 3 years. And so, you know, some of the teachers that have been veteran teachers for, let's say, 15 years, they haven't had an increase in 3 years, and they're not going to be affected by the compression because they were not part of, you know, that the group that was affected.
So. And this money goes for the next school year for the $4.4 million.
Right. So it really is a movement and sort of streamlining a lot of the services that we were offering central, that people were centrally moving in and out of, going to different sites and coming back to their office centrally versus keeping them on campuses and providing those services on campus.
Here's Mari Herreras from The Weekly.
So we talked about this during break, but you're going to run again, right, for another term?
I am.
12 years on the board.
I've been on the board 12 years, and so if I'm fortunate enough to be elected again, we'll be looking at another term. So that would be my.
You know, so here it's, you know, the election cycle for the school board comes up again. I mean, last election cycle was just crazy, as far as I'm concerned. Too many candidates.
Right.
This year they're a little less, but it's two seats. And what goes through your mind as you're you know, processing this whole thing of like, do I really want to run again,
right.
or do you know?
You know, I did have a conversation. I had a conversation with my family, my husband, different employee groups, and different people, and they basically just said, you know, it's important to have somebody on the board that understands the history behind some of the decisions that we've made. And I guess that now, as being the most senior member, comes to me. And so, you know, I really have been in the minority position for much of the time on my board, except for the last 2 years. But I think that we really are making some really positive steps moving forward. And I have young children that are, I mean, my son, who's 5, is starting kinder next year. So I really have an incentive to really be around and continue to work towards making this a better system for all of our children. So they're really my main motivation in wanting to stay.
Question that came sure. in, a caller did not want to go on the air. That's fine, because Rose was very able to take the question. The question is, does Atalita Grijalva believe the board has an understanding as to why students are leaving TUSD?
I do. I mean, I have a lot of friends that have made other choices for their children other than TUSD, and I think that it's really a multi-layered. You have children that that parents want a smaller learning environment for their children. I understand that. I understand that sometimes the communication from the board level to what actually is happening in the classroom, that there's a disconnect there. We didn't have a curriculum department until Mr. Holmes came back to the district and created that. So I think that there are a lot of things that when you eliminate departments in the effort to try to cut costs without thinking of the big picture, this is what ends up happening. You know, you have drops in quality that I really do believe the district is in an upswing in getting a handle on solid curriculum, solid professional development, really honoring the work that's going on there and providing support where we need it. And really, you know, a lot of the leadership opportunities that administrators have, teachers that want to be administrators have in our district now, that's something that we've been asking for and they've been asking for a really long time, that we finally have that avenue for them. And so this last round, we had 19 principal vacancies, and many of them were from the superintendent's leadership team that went through that professional development training and are now ready to be administrators. And so that whole grow our own, where you know the community that you're going to serve, is really huge. And I feel that parents are going to get the sense that we're really listening to what they've been wanting.
What grade would you give Superintendent Sanchez? I believe this is kind of coming up here on his one-year anniversary.
Pretty soon.
Yeah, I think July.
I would give him an A.
Yeah, what? You give
him an A. I would. I think that he has done a pretty amazing job of moving all of these moving parts, getting into the system, understanding what it is, and taking a lot of ownership for even situations that started well before his arrival to the district. I think it was week 2 he was saying, we have this, we have that, when most of it, I'm sure,
was something
that he read about. It was inherited, but he owned it and really, I feel, has made the commitment to stay with our district through the strategic plan, which is 5 years. Provided I think he continues to have the support from the board and the community that he's experienced. I've heard from a lot of different community groups, from business mm-hmm. community to, you know, the parent group at South Tucson that he met with, that are really happy with the fact that he's able to communicate with them and open to meeting with them and talking to them.
We had one quick question. Why not farm out the ethnic studies to a charter school? I don't know how you would do that, but...
I mean...
I'm just passing along
right,
the question.
I understand. Ethnic studies, the
way... Be inclusive here for all our listeners.
Well, if we're talking about the Mexican-American studies, the actual courses... Anybody can pick those up, and there are other schools that are doing that. And so, I really do want to focus on offering those quality programs in our district, and the culturally relevant courses are starting that work, and we're going to continue to push forward with it.
Okay, Mari, I think we can work in
one more question
before we take a break.
I guess I just can't let you leave without asking a DSEC question.
Sure.
You know, we're... folks that I know and that are supportive of the program have, you know, still grumble that it's taking so long, and legal fees are going up. Both sides, you know, are going to continue the billing on the other side, but also TUSD and what they're paying to their attorneys continues to increase too. I think somebody gave me a projection like $850,000 by the end of next year, maybe, that would at the rate they're going now. I don't, you know.
Yeah.
What do you think is lagging? Why continue to lag in the process of implementing the DSEG?
I think some of it is having Dr. Sanchez come in, having come from a district where they actually came out from under an order. When he looked at the unitary status plan, he was really concerned about the fact that there never would seem to be an end to the litigation because of some of the things that were part of that plan. And so it really is a balance of local control and federal control, and some of the things that we want to move forward, some of the things that we all really support, our strong magnet programs and the interpretation of the special master. I mean, I have a lot of respect for Dr. Holly, but I also think that looking at it from the outside, we really do need to come to a point where we can have a communication and negotiate some things, because that was the understanding when we signed the unitary status plan, that this is going to be a living document. And I said it a few times when we voted. And now what's really interesting is that when we try to have a conversation about this one piece of the unitary status plan, can we have a little bit of wiggle room on how we implement the admissions to UHS?
Right.
When we get to that point, that's when it's like, oh, no, it's written in black and white versus the impression that we were given when I voted on it, that it was a living document. It would be something that would continue to be an opportunity for us to work together. And so I would love to get to the point that it be collaborative, but at this point, there is going to be an item, actually, you'll really be interested on, a complete breakdown of the legal fees at our next board meeting.
Okay.
So
sounds good.
All right. And that has been going on since 1979 or something.
72.
It's got to be one of the
early
longest,
70s.
Longest ongoing DSEG cases probably in the country.
Yeah, it is, actually. Mm-hmm.
It's all right. Adelita Grijalva, thank you very much. I hope you have a great weekend.
Thank you.
Nice
you too. Thanks for having me.
Thanks a lot. We'll be right back with our roundtable. Mari sticks around and Dan Shearer joins us right after this. Viro Mori is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. And now at Viro Amore's lovely new location within the remodeled Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, Viro Amore is proud to announce an expanded menu and bar offerings with 16 microbrews on tap and 14 keg wines, along with two separate cooler rooms to keep the beverages at just the right temperature. Viro Amore, Plaza Palomino, and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Viro Amore on the web at viroamore.com.
Another business trip? Why don't you just drive instead of fly?
Well, nobody brings me snacks or drinks in my car. Very seldom do I get to watch a first-run movie or take a nap while driving.
No, seriously. It must be much cheaper to drive.
Not really. I checked out TIA's cost comparison calculator. Flying from Tucson isn't just convenient. It can actually save money.
Flying from Tucson International Airport is convenient and cost-effective. Check out our cost comparison calculator at flytucson.com or text the word COMPARE to 51313. Fly Tucson. It's the way to go.
Today's rapidly changing world brings challenges and opportunities. At Pima Community College, we are working with business and community leaders to develop programs that provide the right training for today's high-demand jobs. Whether the goal is a new career, transferring to a four-year college, or lifelong learning, Pima Community College can help you open the door to new opportunities.
For more information, call 206-4500 or visit pima.edu. As a small business owner, I know the importance of a certified public accountant you can trust. That's why I recommend my CPA, Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates, proud sponsors of the Buckmaster Show, located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com, or follow the live link on buckmastershow.com.
Tucson Desert Art Museum.
Tucson's newest art museum is home to one of the premier collections of pre-1940s Navajo and Hopi textiles, exquisite classic and contemporary paintings and photography, early maps and historic artifacts. Visualize history through art at Tucson Desert Art Museum on East Tankerville Road at Sabino Canyon Road, just west of Udall Park, and on the web at TucsonDart.com. That's TucsonDart.com.
. 12:35 on this Monday afternoon, Dan Scheer joins us now. Dan, editor of the Green Valley News and Saharita Sun, on our Friday roundtable, and Mari Herrera sticks around after our interview with Atalita Grijalva. And Dan, good to see you, and thank you. I want to say thanks very much publicly for the you hosted for me for two roundtables, Fridays, and you also hosted on our Monday Political Face-Off. Went very well. I had a chance to listen to a little of it overseas.
Enjoyed
through the
it.
Glory of the podcast, as yes. We say, you can listen to the program anytime, anywhere in the world. That's what's really great. Thanks, Dan, for helping out. Mari, education question, quick follow-up. Sunnyside, the newly constituted board will have their first meeting coming up, and the question now becomes, with the superintendent, Mr. Iscadero, what's his future there? He's got 2 more years.
He does have contract. 2 more years on his contract. And I think Iscadero will, he's asked to be bought out, but I don't think that's going to happen. I think, first of all, I think that the new board and has to figure out what it's doing, and you just can't come in and say you're out of here, Buster, to begin with. And they may have other plans, though, for him.
They may not want to drop a $500,000 on the buyout.
Yeah, we just went through a special election that cost, money as well. So.
Yeah. Dan, the big story of the week was the special session, Governor Brewer signing what is being called groundbreaking legislation to create and fund a new Department of Child Safety, at least in part to solve some of the problems that certainly have surrounded child welfare issues in this state. This is probably one of those, it's a cliche, I know, but time will tell whether this is going to work.
Absolutely. That's exactly how I look at it. You have a bigger budget, a much higher profile. It's a cabinet-level position. They're vowing now to follow the procedures, which they're supposed to. But this is an agency that I just don't know that money is really going to solve the issue, because as we have heard over the last month or two, part of the problem is that so many of the prevention programs had been cut. And you look at the sheer numbers of them. What did I read? 900 abuse complaints a week come into that agency, 16,000 kids in foster care. So you're not only looking after, trying to look into each of those complaints, you have to follow up on them. The people who generally are in the system are not very reliable, so they're not going to classes, or drugs are more important than their kids, or it is a nightmare. So to your point, I think we're going to be talking about this again in about 4 or 5 years. Same problem.
Arizona is not the first state to go through this, where they've had to look at their CPS departments, where they've had very public cases. I remember when I was living in Washington, there was there were these cases
in Washington State, yeah,
right. And really, it's going to come down to caseworkers and how they interact with the families and how that leadership, the new leadership. You got 200 pages of statutory changes to the department, but that's going to really be the key, is how the leadership directs the case management and how those case managers interact with the families.
And I know several people who have been case managers in CPS in Arizona, and I'll tell you, the problem is that they lose heart, because you simply can't help everybody. And in fact, you are so overwhelmed. You walk in the morning and you have 10 new cases, and it is just, you go into it with good intentions, but this job burns out people faster than teaching does. It's just an incredible job.
And the job, primarily young people go into this out of college, and they don't have a lot of life experience.
Well, here's an example. Yeah. The MSW program at ASU, they have a specific program to for folks who want to do their MSWs, where they can work, get their tuition paid for, and they can work with CPS's caseworkers and commit to working within that system for a period of time. But I think I agree wholeheartedly with Dan. It's tough work, and not a lot of kudos go to those people in our community. But when things do get through the cracks, you know, the public wants to know, why did a kid die? Why did this happen? How did this happen? And it's hard, you know. How do we fill those cracks, you know?
And it's interesting how the media look at these types of things, because it's so easy to go in and blame the caseworker,
right,
blame the system, whatever. And a lot of times, you know, we have to clean up some things, and hopefully we're seeing that right now. But most of the time, it's just much more complicated than that.
Yeah, for sure.
Filing for office, that deadline has now come and go. We have some idea on who will be running for what office. Dan, CD3, the congressional race there, where the incumbent, Raul Grijalva, that's kind of an interesting situation of what happened. I know you interviewed about a month ago a political newcomer named Damian Kennedy, who was trying to qualify. He didn't qualify for the ballot.
He had kind of a ragtag tag team put together. He's out of Amato. He was very involved in parent-teacher type things at Soperi School, and a good heart, but just didn't have really what it takes to even get the signatures, unfortunately. We really expected that all three were going to qualify, and they actually had a debate set for June 7th, which we were going to attend. My guess is that's not happening now. Michael Leva's now, I guess, calling himself a libertarian. Gabriela Salcedo Mercer, who was very instrumental in 2 years ago, has a lot of money problems, frankly.
Yeah, we had her on about 3 or 4 weeks ago, and she was kind of our interview with her. She said it was kind of the reconstituted launch of the campaign, and they were saying that they admitted they had a lot of money problems, but they felt that now they can kind of get on the right track and to beat Raul Grijalva. That's a huge order, Mari.
I think it's always a huge order. I think my last few times covering these, and especially that district, you have to have a well-tuned machine to mm-hmm. run and beat Raul Grijalva in this county and state. You know, you just have to, and no one's been able to do it. Democrats who try and come up and run against him, they never succeed. Same thing with the Republicans. And
I've moderated several forums where he has been present, and I'll tell you what, it's the only time he really looks like a statesman, because the people who go up against him just simply are not qualified a lot of the times, and it's unfortunate. But he's going to be in that seat for a good long time, which is unfortunate, because I think he is one of the least effective members of Congress. But he's going to be in there because a lot of people just think about an inch deep when it comes to voting, and that's unfortunate.
Gabby Salcedo Mercer will have a write-in opponent in the primary.
Right, Mike Pollack, and we'll see. He's coming off of a loss. What did he just lose?
The Sunnyside School Board.
Okay, and so, but now he thinks he can go to Congress. So, you know what, she hopefully has her act a little bit better together than she did a couple of years ago. But in the end, you face Grijalva, and it's probably not going to happen this time around. And of course, the GOP on the national level is not going to pour any money into this thing, because Grijalva is so strong.
Well, I've got the list in front of me of all the candidates who did qualify. We've got 8 candidates running for governor. Kind of interesting, the attorney general's race. Mark Brnovich going against the incumbent Tom Horn, who certainly has had his share of legal issues. Brnovich is going to be our guest. By the way, we'll meet him on Tuesday. So that could be an interesting primary. And there was a group of
Republicans,
state lawmakers today, 9 of them, who said, Tom Horn, please resign. Tom's not going to resign, I'm sure.
No, he's not. So 9 Republicans have delivered a letter to him saying, hey, why don't you end this re-election bid? And by my math, there are 53 Republicans in the state legislature. So that's 15% of them just kind of came forward and said, hey, you know what, why don't you bounce out of this? There are two qualities about Tom Horn. One is he's extremely arrogant, and the other is he's smart. He's very smart, and if he liked to follow the rules, he'd be a terrific attorney general. but his problem is he just can't. Felicia Rodellini, who is the Democrat, is looking real, real good.
Well, you know, Mari, yes, there's been tremendous amount of publicity, but about Tom, negative publicity. But there's that old thing about your name out in the public.
Right.
He has really, like it or not, he's got very good name recognition.
He does have good name recognition. And yeah, that's the problem. I mean, it seems like that with lots of candidates that come up every season. We're mm-hmm. like, oh, come on, people. Are we really going to vote for this person?
And then they're reelected?
Yeah. I mean, that happens all the time. I think the Dems in this one particular race were really smart to limit it to one candidate this year, because I think that was a problem last go around. You had two candidates that were great candidates. Each one was great in their own way, Vince Rubago and Felicia. But I think this time they got it down in one, and that's going to be a good thing for them, possibly, to see the results.
Dan and Murray, looking over kind of the legislative races, nothing really too exciting in the primary area, but one that kind of jumps out at me and I think we'll be really watching is District 9. Dr. Fries from the University Medical Center, the Democrat, is going against Victoria Steele and Ethan Orr in that race. That's the top two vote getters will win that race. So I think you've got three very good candidates in Dr. Fries, Ethan Orr, and Victoria Steele in District 9. And by the way, Steve Farley is reelected, basically.
Uh-huh. Right.
He will not have any opposition. Dan, kind of your thoughts about we've got District 1 with Republican Gary Keeney, the White Mountains cattleman who's been very involved. And he's very well known in the rural areas, going against lawmaker Adam Quasman, two lawmakers, and Andy Tobin. Kind of an interesting three-way Republican primary in CD1.
Right. And we'll see again. So we're talking about what Ann Kirkpatrick here,
who's the incumbent,
who's considered very vulnerable, and so we'll see what happens there. To me, that is almost as interesting a race as CD2 with Ron Barber and one of the three people who are going at it in the GOP primary who will be facing him.
Yeah, Shelley Kice, of course, Martha McSally, and then Charles Wooten is the third Republican to try to face off against
Ron Barber. Do you think there's like something interesting, though, happening within the Republican Party of like, let's try and clean up our image, let's try to do something? You've got Tobin saying Keene needs to drop out.
Right.
And Keene's like, look, I'm the rancher cowboy in this race. I'm not going to drop out.
You know, and from what I hear, he is very popular in the rural areas. And that is an amazingly large district.
It's huge.
I think it's the biggest district other than Wyoming, which is a state and district in itself, but the largest congressional district geographically in the United States.
The elections that have a larger rural base, I think those are more interesting than any of the other ones, frankly, because you just can't tell with those rural people. You know, you may think they're going to vote one way, but they, you know, I think it's so distressing when people decide, oh, yeah, they're the rural folks, you know. But
well, you know, I talked a couple of weeks ago to Robert Graham, who's the state GOP chairman, and he was saying, you know, part of the problem with the GOP was that they were treating all the counties the same. And as he put it, he says, we would have our Maricopa County shirt on going to all these different counties. And he says the flavor of each is so different. We've had to learn that and then to speak to their needs. And it's very wise. So, yes, there is something going on in the Republican Party.
Switching from politics to economic news, Dan Scheer and Mary Herreras, big box retailers, as we all know, are very picky about where they want to locate. The Star had a story this week about southeast part of Tucson seems to be booming enough rooftops to interest the big box people. And we had our real estate guy, Raj Kohli, was on the show this week talking about the hottest area for real estate in the Tucson Valley right now, the southeast side.
Exactly. I heard that interview with him, and I thought it was very interesting, especially coming off about a week and a half, maybe 2 weeks ago. A couple of people from Saurita were up at a major conference in Vegas trying to lure some of these big box retailers, and you say the key word there, which is rooftops. And we're at about population 50 to 60,000 in our area. They like to see it more like an 80, 90,000. So they flat out told us, at least some of them, hey, it's going to be at least 2 years years before we start looking down there. And then we see the story in the Star where they're willing to go over there to, you know, to Vail and to, you know, southeast part of Tucson. You know what? We get it. Our time will come. We are moving forward every day down in Sahuarita and Green Valley, and it'll come.
Well, the Southwest area was part of a Pima County plan like about 7 years ago to really focus on that area. The expectation we'd have 700,000 people that we needed to kind of put the welcome mat out for. Mm-hmm. So, but you know, I don't blame retailers for looking at Southeast. They don't really, there's nothing there in terms of, you know, a commanding anchor presence, you know, and it makes complete sense to take advantage of those rooftops that are out there.
Well, I'm just glad that they're even looking here, because they told us at this conference a couple of weeks ago that even Tucson wasn't on the radar for a lot of them. So this is really encouraging news that hopefully it is.
Going to wrap it up, but I always like to work in a Rosemont question with Dan Shear. He's kind of our Rosemont go-to guy. Hud Bay, which is the Toronto, Ontario-based mineral company, has extended their offer in the hostile takeover for Augusta, the parent company of Rosemont.
I'm going to just stick to the prediction I've had here for the last few months, and that is Hudbay will prevail. They're going to be patient, and they will get Rosemont, and it will be mined.
Then there'll be it will be mined.
Oh, I think eventually it will be, without a doubt.
All right. Mari Herreras, thank you very much. Mari, we'll look for your work in the Tucson Weekly, and Dan Shear of the Green Valley News, Sahuarita Sun, we will also look at your work. Thanks a lot. Have a great weekend.
You too.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Steve Christie. I've served as an RTA board member since 2009 and through last year as its chairman. The RTA continues to be a most successful regional effort, with the RTA and our member jurisdictions completing so far more than 540 construction projects to reduce congestion, increase our safety, and improve crosstown mobility. As part of the original Citizens Advisory Committee, I'm proud of our citizen-driven plan as well as the RTA's accomplishments. We deliver, we promise. Learn more at rtamobility.com.
Vero Amore restaurants are known as the place for authentic wood-fired Neapolitan pizzas, plus delicious pastas, panini, salads, and more. Every flavorful dish is homemade using the finest and freshest local and imported ingredients available. Vero Amore has two locations open daily, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events.
Devereaux, Arizona inspires hope in the lives of the most vulnerable members of our community, our children. In Pima County, there are more than 4,000 children in foster care that need your help. Devereaux, Arizona's foster care program gives you the training and support you need to make a difference in the life of a child. Donate, volunteer, or become a foster parent. Find out how at devereauxarizona.org or call 520-296-5551.
UA Biosphere 2's new ocean gallery and its large viewing windows give tour visitors a look under the surface of the existing Biosphere 2 ocean. Within the ocean gallery is the new Return to the Sea of Cortez exhibit, which chronicles the storied 1940 journey of author John Steinbeck and marine biologist Ed Ricketts to the Gulf. Experience this remarkable journey for yourself. Come visit Biosphere 2 today. Info at b2science.org.
The Green Valley News and Sahuarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sahuarita Sun, it's all right here.
Jerry!
What's wrong?
The client conference call is right now.
I thought it was next week.
I don't have the presentation ready.
Okay. Blame the internet. Say it went out.
They'll never believe that. They know we have Cox Business. Our internet is too reliable and is 100 times faster than basic DSL.
Say customer service is closed.
Cox Business has 24/7 support.
Well, say it would take too long to get a technician here.
No, they know the award-winning customer service is local. They told us to get Cox Business.
The call has started.
Good morning.
I forgot about the business meeting. We have terrific internet.
Switch to Cox Business Internet and Voice for only $99 a month. Speed options up to 100 times faster than basic DSL. Plus, get a 30-day money-back guarantee and free professional installation with a 3-year agreement. Visit coxbusiness.com and switch today. Ends 8/31/14. Price excludes taxes, fees, and may be subject to minimum service requirements. Visit coxbusiness.com for internet speed options and details. Actual speeds vary. Limited 30-day money-back guarantee. Exclusions and other restrictions apply.
That music signals the weekend on the Buckmaster Show. Weekend Watch with Matt Russell, brought to you by Grant County and Silver City, New Mexico. Just three and a half hours east of Tucson if you're looking for a great weekend getaway. And a place that is a little bit cooler, in fact about 15 degrees cooler than Tucson. Head for the hills and Silver City with that mile high up to about 7,000 foot elevation. Really perfect this time of year. You can find out about all the great places to stay, like Manzano's RV Park, Pinos Altos Cabins, and on it goes, at southwestnewmexico.org. We welcome now the host of Weekend Watch, Mr. Matt Russell, Inside Tucson Business food and beverage columnist and award-winning Tucson publicist. How are you today, Matt?
I'm doing great, Bill. Nice to have you back in the old Buckmaster saddle again after a couple weeks away.
Ready for a happy hour.
Indeed. You know, as you know, Friday happy hour is always at the top of our weekend to-do list, and today's happy hour is going to give you the chance to enjoy some great drinks and bites, all while supporting a great cause. So starting at 5 p.m. today at the Cushing Street Bar and Grill downtown, their happy hour is going to be kicked up with music and a magic show, raffles, and an auction. And the $10 admission fee is going to go to support Tucson's Hope Animal Shelter. They're calling it Happy Hour for Hope, and it sounds like a delicious way to get my weekend started from 5 to 9 tonight at the Cushing Street Bar and Grill.
I think you said something about a magic act. That's the disappearing margarita. It will be gone faster than a blink of an eye.
It sounds like you've seen me do my work, Bill.
I certainly have. How about those yearning for a little bit of Mexican food?
Yeah, you know, national recording artist Roger Klein is going to be in Tucson all day tomorrow introducing his new line of premium tequila, which he calls Mexican Moonshine, at seven different events all across town. Now, he's going to start this tour at 2:30 tomorrow at Hi-Fi Kitchen downtown, ultimately weaving his way through six other restaurants throughout the day, like Old Father Inn and Finney's Landing, Dante's Fire, and Augustine Kitchen. And he's going to close out the tour at Hotel Congress on Saturday night with a free concert. Choose one venue or follow Roger to them all and taste what Mexican moonshine is all about. This is going to be fun.
There is always room for another tequila in the Tucson area. Summer menu time, Bob's Steak and Chop House.
Yeah, you know, we're starting to see lots of great summer specials at restaurants all across town, but we really like this three-course summer menu, as you said, Bob's Steak and Chop House, which is up at the Omni Tucson National Resort. Start with a soup or a wedge salad, followed by either a prime filet mignon or broiled salmon with some delicious sides, and finish her up with a warm chocolate brownie sundae. All of that is only $39.99 per person, Bill, all summer long. So I say treat yourself to an amazing and affordable dinner at this spectacular resort.
Matt, what can we look for in Inside Tucson Business, your current column?
Yeah, Bill, you know, there's some cocktails around town with some pretty bizarre names, and I sat down with two mixologists in town who told me some fun stories behind the names of their own drinks. What's in a name, you may ask? Read my column at InsideTucsonBusiness.com or pick up a copy wherever newspapers are sold.
Well, I was thinking about you in Portugal, all those fine wines and ports and out on the Azores with all that good cheese. Oh. It's such a beautiful climate. They don't even have barns for the cows. They just move them from pasture to pasture. Happy cows make very delicious dairy products, I'll tell you. Matt, it's great to have you back. Thanks.
Thanks so much, Bill.
All right. Well, we have a jam-packed week for you next week. Of course, Monday, we've got the Monday political face-off. And then talk about very serendipitous time to have former U.S. Army Chief of Staff General John Wickham on the program. With all that's been going on with the Veterans Administration, the head of the Veterans Administration resigning today. I know he is a personal friend of General Wickham, so it'll be interesting to hear General Wickham's take on all these developments that are happening surrounding the VA. That's going to be coming up on the Monday edition of The Buckmaster Show. The Buckmaster Show is a production of Bill Buckmaster Communications. On behalf of our team, my producer Rosemary Brandt, I am Bill Buckmaster, wishing you a wonderful and safe weekend and telling you and reminding you that we have a great lineup for you over the weekend here, starting tomorrow. Phil Cedar with The Gardening Show at 7 o'clock. Phil from Green Things, with the weather we've been having, all this hot weather, well, we need some summer gardening tips, that's for sure. That really starts the whole weekend of expert talk. And then Monday, we're back at it with the local talk shows. Chris and Joe with Wake Up Tucson, Christy Simone, then from 8 to 9, after Wake Up Tucson with Chris and the Daily Double Show. Then we want to tell you about a new show, a new local talk show, For Tucson at 4, hosted by Mike Shaw. That's coming up on Monday at 4 o'clock, Mike's premier show. He's got the mayor coming on. Mayor Rothschild will be his leadoff interview. And of course, Rosemary Brandt and I will be back with you at 12:04 Monday afternoon. Rose and I wish you a great weekend. Have a good one.
Intelligent Talk 24/7, AM 1030, KVOI, Cortero, Tucson. On the web at KVOI.com.